if there's one thing I've observed working with so many practices over the years, it's that not all doctors are having the same experience with their practice. It makes me think of runners I've seen in my neighborhood. Some of them run so smoothly it looks like you could balance a book on their heads. While others, like myself, when I run, make unseemly jerky motions as they obviously struggle to go the distance. I've noticed this same phenomenon at our team training camps where some of the practices come up to the front of the room. We call this the hot seat presentation. This is where they give and receive information about their practices. Not only do some of these practices underproduce, it appears that they actually have to work harder at going broke than the superstars work at getting rich and setting production records. So much emphasis is placed on how much a practice earns and how much ends up as net profit at the bottom line, it's easy to forget that there's an emotional price paid by the doctor and his or her staff to achieve that profit and monthly production. While some doctors stoically climb back into the practice ring each day for another emotional beating, others find practice fulfilling and emotionally unchallenging. Among other things, I want to spend some time today talking about the emotional price of practice success and why not everyone is forking over the same emotional currency for the same financial payoff. The doctor that finds himself, for example, struggling to meet financial obligations faces a major emotional distraction. That's an example of a higher emotional price. This doctor is going to have difficulty being fully present with his or her patients, and yeah, patients are going to pick up on that. Another example is the doctor that has to spend 3 or 4 hours a week, maybe even several hours a day, dealing with new ad campaigns to keep the practice afloat is going to face similar emotional drain. Even if a doctor can comfortably meet his or her monthly expenses, knowing in their heart that there should be twice this amount of monthly profit is still going to be unsettling. The doctor who manages to keep the wheels on and moving forward will still feel incomplete if 80% of his patients have to be purchased through advertising. I watch as doctors commit the majority of their front office staff time to calling patients who've missed their appointments. In short, there are many ways to feel stressed in practice, but I've come to the conclusion that nearly every source of practice stress can be traced to one cause. Somewhere in the Bible, I think there's a reference to pride being like the real problem or the root problem, the root of all evil or something like that. I think it's that way in practice. There's really only one problem. Unfortunately, like pride, it's a problem none of us think we have. I'd sum it all up like this. I believe that the amount of stress and financial disappointment in a doctor's life is a direct factor of the degree to which they are not giving patients what they want. On this month's recording, I want to look into the areas impacted by this common misconception. I want to use a series of test questions to bring home the fact that most practices fall far short of delivering the level of care that patients really expect. We recently had a seminar here in Phoenix, the Team Leader Development Seminar, and I was gratified to see the quality of staff that doctors sent to this meeting. Unfortunately, there was too many of them still reporting that their practices scored low on the consumerism scale and that their doctor was not open to talking about it. That kind of led to us creating this month's recording with this simple test. I believe there's about 12 questions in all that we're going to go through. And yes, I've referred to this in the past as consumerism. And the doctor who truly achieves consumerism, we're going to refer to hereafter as the consumerist. This is a high compliment at Whitehall. We're going to use this specially prepared test because it's so easy to fool yourself about this concept of consumerism. I found that every doctor honestly believes in their heart that they are the embodiment of practice consumerism, that is, giving patients what they really want. Here's a test you can take to measure how effectively you've delivered on a patient's expectation. There's going to be 12 questions. I'm going to go through them briefly so that you kind of have an idea of the scope of what we're going to do today. Then I'm going to come back and go through them one at a time, which is the body of our text. All right, the first question has to do with referrals, how many referrals you're getting per month. Now, I've covered this on past tapes. Everybody knows that when you're dealing with me, this is the baseline. If you can't agree that referrals are important, there's really nothing we can do here at Whitehall to help you move forward. There's research on this to show, for example, that you should have between 2 and 3% of your active patient base, that is patients that still consider you their doctor, these people should be referring at least one person to you each month. So if you had 1,000 people that were active in the practice considering you their doctor, you would be getting between 20 and 30 referrals per month. We're going to come back to that. Number two, profitability. Is your profitability below expectation? If you're a general practitioner, you should be looking at an overhead no more than 62%. Yes, some of our superstars are getting overheads as low as 57%. Now, that's the regular practices. The ones that are doing a lot of sedation, yes, it can get down to 50% or even lower in some cases. All a factor of how big their cases are. If you have a $2,500 case average, you know, kind of the baseline at Whitehall, the one that we say gives you that power to advertise, for example, to pay staff good money, all the things that make a practice financially healthy, if you can do that, you should be able to get that 62% overhead. The better the cases, statistically, the lower that overhead's going to be. What we're going to talk about today is other factors that can drag that overhead up and offset this. The next question is very simple. The practice growth blockage, as you perceive it, as your team perceives it, is it demand or is it delivery? Demand means you don't think you have enough patients. Delivery means you think you have enough patients, but you can't, you know, see yourself ever serving them all or giving them the same level or standard of care that you would like to give them. This is one of the most important. Like I said, we're going to come back through these. Next, staff turnover. By itself, this may not indicate a consumerism problem, but often it contributes as the final straw to many staff leaving. It's just too stressful dealing with the patients. Next, missed appointments. When we start to see 15% of the practice as no-shows, where there are appointments made, we know the problems are serious. More serious than inefficient staff, it's as serious as unhappy patients. Next, a high degree of patient frustration. I'll be coming back to that one. That's your frustration with patients. Next, believing that patients cannot be trusted to make a mature decision about their own health. Many, of course, would be quick to defend their position based on stories of patients who acted very immaturely. You know, as soon as they got the chance, the patients took off. When you hear what I have to say about this, when we go back through these, you might feel differently. Next, you have weak scheduling staff. The people at the front desk always disappoint you. You generally believe that if you could just get better staff, you could enforce your treatment programs. Next, you find you or your team regularly talking about the need to educate patients. 10, the doctor feels like non-referral patients really could only be referred to as deadbeats, low-quality patients, sometimes called junk patients. 11, often feels persecuted for your practice and personal integrity. Number 12, patients tend to follow through with your recommendations, but they don't refer. You'll see why when we go through this. See, normally these go together. Patients that stay in the practice also refer and vice versa, giving those doctors that have this combination kind of a quantum advantage over the other doctors. But some people manage to somehow split the difference and get patients that follow through but don't refer. And we're going to show you why this is a tip-off. So I want to go back through these now. The first one I want to go through is the R word. Referrals. You know, I found that the most assertive, self-confident, self-proclaimed practice management geniuses out there still find pause at the thought that they only get 4, 5, maybe 6 referral patients a month. You know, as talented as they are, as quick on their feet as they are, as good as they are in case presentation, why, they should be getting more referrals. Even those people, even the real egotists of our business, still agree that there should be referrals, especially when they hear that other doctors are getting 50, 60, or 70 a month, maybe even just down the street. It really gets to them. You know, at our recent team leader development seminar, many of those who attended, they were worried that they wouldn't be able to reach their doctor with the need to remove some obvious or subtle blockage to the practice. We taught them that there was hope for any doctor who could agree with the referral premise. And that premise is that referrals are the most important of all practice statistics. In fact, at the same team leader meeting, we taught them that all practice statistics only exist to explain the monthly referral performance of the practice. See, too many doctors think that if the referral numbers are low, they only need to start asking for patients to send to their friends and to do it systematically. While asking doesn't hurt, let me ask you a question. If you went to a doctor's office that treated you rudely, kept you waiting in the waiting room, tried to force unwanted treatment on you, would you wholeheartedly recommend this practice to your friends simply because they ask you to refer? Of course you wouldn't. On the other hand, if you were treated like royalty in every way, were continually surprised at the respect given to your wishes, would you need someone to suggest that you tell others about that practice? Like I said, asking for referrals can never hurt, but make no mistake, it doesn't make up for finely tuned consumerism. All right, next, profitability. As I asked earlier, Is this below your expectations? You might be surprised to learn that failing to meet a patient's expectations can drive your own overhead straight through the roof. Let me explain this. I mentioned this earlier. See, the same principles of consumerism that inspire patients to refer are the same ones that cause a patient to remain in the practice. So this has the effect of giving the highly consumerized practice an unfair advantage. Not only are they keeping their patients, they're scoring impressive referral statistics each month. See, the practice that falls outside this ideal is constantly punished on two fronts. First, they have underutilized productive capacity at all times. They have staff, equipment, standing idle most of the day. Second, they have to spend upwards to somewhere between $200 and $300, if they're lucky, to advertise a Kohl's prospect into the practice. Now, I realize there's some people out there that, depending on the area and the competition and the quality of their ads and on, can actually beat that number, but that's an average that we're seeing. See, when this prospect finally does arrive at the door of the practice, not only has the doctor spent a noticeable percentage of the prospective earnings off that patient to attract them there through advertising, they're also likely to see a smaller case develop from the typical advertising patient. And I might add that this is not to mention the likelihood of an advertising patient wholeheartedly referring friends and relatives and coworkers is noticeably less than that of a strongly referred patient. Yes, it doesn't seem fair. And yes, it's a costly way to practice. Stop a moment, however, with me, and think of the emotional price. The doctor struggling with marginally committed, low-production advertising patients isn't just working for paltry wages. They're suffering from low self-esteem, the kind that naturally results from patients passing through the practice like somebody left the back door open. And this type of stress and low self-esteem that comes from feeling like practice is constantly cheating you somehow can trigger compulsive behavior, namely borrowing, spending, what I would call aggressive investing or gambling-type investing, as we see so many people participate in, kind of a desperation effort to make it all seem worthwhile. I've seen these doctors turn to a second mortgage to fulfill consumption dreams that are supposed to be met through earned income. Even worse, this can lead doctors feeling hopeless and easy prey to the ruthless world of full capitation. Those who've attended any of our financial seminars know that the longer you stay in the practice saddle, the less you have to save full retirement. Being stuck in a nightmare practice existence is going to cause many doctors to bail out early, ultimately become greeters at Walmart, wearing the red vest, I suppose. Not that that's all bad. You know, after a few years of working at Walmart, you might get the day shift and eventually get Christmas off. I think you get the picture. See, I said that overhead can be a direct and indirect result of failing to meet patient expectations, whether it's low production achieved with marketing patients or the overhead that you regularly pay to provide productive capacity for patients that never show up. I think some of you are wondering to what degree this problem might apply to you. Well, if your referral numbers that I talked about earlier didn't hit you hard when you took that test, think of it in these simple terms. If you had to describe the blockage of your practice, would you say that you had a demand problem or a delivery problem? See, demand problems mean that you have more productive capacity than you have new regular patients. If you have more patients than you have productive capacity, then you have a delivery problem. So how would you or your staff answer this question? I've been in meetings where staff say demand and the doctor says delivery. I think it's advisable that you ask your team right now if you can. Ask them if you have too few new patients or if you need more staff space and equipment to handle the ones you got. Just put it to them like that. You can't say what's the problem with the practice because everybody comes up with some little, you know, technical, tactical problem. You got to give them these two grand choices. See, the answer to this question is one of the most revealing of all consumerism tests that you can take. If you've been in practice over 5 years and you haven't built a new, larger space in the last couple of years, and you answered that your problem is demand, there's a pretty good chance that you're out of sync with one of the referral essence components. Some of you have heard us on previous tapes talk about these: cost, convenience, control, comfort, compassion, competence, that is clinical and interpersonal competence. We're going to talk a little more about those, you know, in detail later, but what I want to accomplish on this month's recording is to really give you a filter and a profile to measure yourself against to see really how good you're doing on these. I learned at the team leader seminar that nearly all of our doctors believe they've got this totally wired down, you know, especially the ones getting 3 referrals a month. So this simple test works like magic to nail down this issue once and for all. So I'd like you to stay with me as we go through it. You see, if you have poor monthly referrals and your team acknowledges that your growth blockage is simply that you don't have enough new patients, then you're pegged. You have a serious hole in your consumer offering, whether it's price, convenience, case presentation, an inept person answering your prospective new patient call. You got to face it. It's not the patients. It's the practice. Really coming to own this concept, in my opinion, is worth whatever it takes, whatever it costs. See, if there are two grand illusions that our doctors are naturally smitten with, one is that they mistakenly believe they have more peak demand capacity, that is productive capacity, than they really have. The other is that they're really impressing their patients. Without exception, I found that doctors naturally think they're giving patients what they really want. Part of this comes out of the fact that the doctors really know what patients want. What they don't know is that they're not really giving it to them. See, they think just knowing that is enough. And they think that patients are more forgiving than they really are. See, it's a natural blind spot that arises out of the respect that patients naturally show to their doctor. You know, in fact, about every practice can impress some small segment of their local market. If competition's weak, their market might be very forgiving. We call this the competitive challenge ratio. This ratio compares the number of prospective patients in a community to the number of viable practitioners. One doctor to every 1,200 prospective patients is about the average. That means that in that environment, the average consumerist or the average consumerism will probably do the job of impressing patients into referring their friends. When you get about one doctor to 700 prospective patients, this is a competitive challenge ratio that's a whole different story. Patients will demand and receive what they want from a practice, or they'll go elsewhere and they know it. Recently, I encountered the ultimate in anti-consumerism. It was a practice averaging 2 referrals a month with a competitive challenge ratio of 1 doctor per 5,500 people. That's right, 1 doctor to 5,500 prospective patients was getting 2 referrals a month. Let me wrap this section of the recording up with a reminder that if you or your team have concluded that your growth blockage is demand, that is demand versus delivery, then you can rest assured that you have some work to do on referral essence delivery, one of those components that we talked about. The next stressful outcome of poor practice consumerism often comes as a surprise to many of our clients. I'm talking about staff turnover. When staff are something less than proud of the way their practice is perceived by the average patient, turnover can easily arise. Granted, sometimes staff can be the carriers of the anti-consumer disease, but in the end, it always really still comes back to the doctor. I tend to think of the staff turnover component that arises from these unhappy patients as occurring along a continuum. At one end, you have quality delivery problems so severe that even the staff refuse to be patients or allow their own family members to come in as patients. I've even had staff tell me that when new patients call, they feel bad about doing anything that would encourage them to come in as a new patient. These staff tell me horror stories about patients being oversold, overcharged, undercared for. This is kind of an indication that you've hit bottom when staff refuse to be patients in their own clinic. I've even had doctors call us in tears telling us that staff wouldn't even let them treat them. Like I said, that's about as low as it gets on the consumerism scale. In these cases, you tend to keep only the most desperate staff that believe they can't find work elsewhere. At the other end of the continuum, I have staff who tell me that they could get $3 an hour more pay at another practice just down the street, but they chose to stay in their clinic because of the integrity of the doctor and the quality of care that they deliver. I believe that these staff have a much higher success rate at getting the marginal fringe that call in as new advertising patients to actually follow up and show up for their first appointment. I believe that they convey their belief about the quality of the care of the clinic in the voice when they talk over the phone. Unless you score embarrassing low on the consumerism delivery scale, you'll probably find that this weakness in the practice doesn't cause staff turnover, but simply contributes to it. I think there's few challenges in practice that can create the kind of stress that high staff turnover can create. If you're seeing 30% or more of your team turning over each year, you need to look at this situation. You know, we're talking about the stress and the emotional trauma that it is, you know, for you to not be a consumerist. Think of what it does for your team when you're in there hammering them to try to get patients to show up that don't want to be there, to pay that don't want to pay anything, you know, to buy a case that they don't want to buy, to do things they don't want to do. The staff feel like meat in a sandwich. They're always in this vice between you and the patients. And they look at the money and they look at the stress. And I tell you, when they get a chance to get something better, that is maybe same money, less stress, they're out of there. Right, next, I want to look at missed appointments as one of the criteria for telling if you're a true consumerist. This is one of the best indicators of delivery excellence or delivery problems. As I mentioned earlier, one of the main problems with doctors perceiving that they have a problem with fulfilling patient expectation is that the patient's usually hesitant to speak up. Instead, they just fail to show up for their appointment. I've watched doctors blame their reception staff for no-shows, claiming that if staff would just do their job, you know, the job of hounding people on the telephone, the schedule would fill up. Granted, there's patients out there that need a reminder call, and there are staff that fail in their duty to remind this class of patient. This isn't the no-show that I'm concerned about. It's the one that represents the unsold segment of the practice that we keep pushing staff get back onto the schedule. This is a stretch. We're trying to take people that aren't fully sold and put them in the slot of people that really should be sold, and the difference is that emotional tearing that I've been talking about. See, when a doctor finds himself frustrated with the front desk staff because of no-shows, it's a sign that serious scrutiny of the system is called for. Like I said, by itself may not mean anything, but with these other 12 points of consumerism that we're giving you today, you start to see a pattern. Finally, you have to say, you know, maybe it is the practice, maybe it isn't the patient, and maybe it isn't the staff. This is especially true when it appears to be a trend. If patients tell the doctor that, you know, they're down for the whole treatment, I'm down for the whole enchilada, doc, but then they consistently fail to show up for the next visit, you need to interpret this for what it really is. These patients weren't sold, even though they seemed sold during the treatment plan presentation. In fact, you can stop right here if this describes you. If you're seeing patients consistently no-show their second visit, you can rest assured that they're feeling overwhelmed in case presentation. The doctor isn't successfully getting the patient to air their concerns about the cost and so forth. This has actually become a nasty pattern in our industry. The doctor gets the patient to nod their approval through a compelling presentation, you know, using scripts and timing, instead of making suggestions and then really listening to the patient's concerns. The doctor that can cleverly persuade a patient to nod their approval in case presentation may find it easier to blame reception staff for poor follow-up than it is to face the fact that patients weren't sold on the package of care to begin with. Am I saying that case presentations that lead to missed appointments are always a result of dominant, overwhelming presentations? Not hardly. Too often, it just comes down to the patient being left on the sidelines during that presentation. A client I worked with years ago taught me this. I actually watched him an entire day in case presentation. It was really inspiring. He would tell the patient what they needed, so forth, and then he would sit back and he would use his own silence. He was very positive and, you know, accepting in his demeanor and so forth, and he would just let silence move the patient to talk about their concerns and their fears. In fact, he told me that until the patient gives you some concerns and fears, you're literally glossing over the problem and you're going to have a no-show. And I know when he told me that, I was thinking, you know, I've watched so many guys struggle with overcoming objections. I've always felt like you really can't do that. He told me you don't have to overcome objections. They'll overcome their own objections. Just let them get it out in the open. Let them tell you that they're worried about the money. He said, and after they would air this concern, he would still sit back lovingly, you know, approvingly in his demeanor, looking at them. And the patient would say, gosh, you know, doc, this could really cost me more than I can afford. He would just sit quietly, and then the patient would say, but you know, what I could do is, you know, I've got this raise coming up. Or in other words, the patient would solve their own problem, but he had to get them to air it. He proved it to me through the entire day. And you know, I have to tell you honestly, I was uncomfortable sometimes. I felt like the doctor should have stepped in, but he just sat there quietly, letting people work through this, kind of work through it out loud. See, if you're seeing more than 10% of your scheduled appointments no-showing, you've probably got a problem with case presentation. It usually comes down to what we call bundling, or bundling too much care in a straight up take it or leave it presentation.